We're glad to be here this morning, and thank you very much for joining all of us. We're going to go ahead and just do a quick roll call to confirm attendance and establish a quorum. When I call your name, please unmute and stay present. David Aiken?
Present.
Jim Hugh?
Present.
Jeff Photo?
Present.
Jeff Justice?
Present.
Gordon Hens?
Present.
And Jerry Jones, who's not here. Well, thank you. So your attendance has been noted, and also joining us today is Public Utilities Department Executive Assistant Director. Heather, and it actually doesn't look like that's the case.
Gaia Garst filling in for Lisa Celaya, Interim Assistant Director for the Business Support Branch.
Good. Thank you for joining us today. I appreciate it. So we'll go to number two on the agenda. Do we have anyone from the public in attendance who would like to comment? No? So we'll move on to number three on there with the IROC chair updates. I do not have any updates at this time on there. I'm just glad we're all here and meeting today. Item number four, the IROC members' comments on requests for future items on the agenda.
I know we've had discussions with you, so. I think an update on the AMI project and also an update from the city on what's going on with filling our vacancy.
Yeah. We've been discussing and requesting updates on that. I know we can work with the city on there too. So we would really like to have that on the next agenda item in terms of what's the update in terms of the status on filling the vacancy seats on here, and then also, as David mentioned, the AMI progress on that. And it doesn't have to be a full presentation, so we would like to have that on the agenda.
I might note that on the work plan that we're going to be approving, there's a whole number of things that should come before the board or the committee. And I would just note that there are other things, such as the pure water project, status of the cost of service study, and so on and so forth, that really probably are more important than the other things that we see today.
Yeah, we currently do the federal government's changed some of their regulations on both PFAS and microplastics. And I changes of how our department's doing on that and whether there'll be any additional in the first year water than the buses and here about all that could be in a subcommittee, could be in the middle.
Commissioner Felice, I think you're notating all of that there on that. We'll get the plan together in terms of what the agendas will look forward for moving forward, and then we'll make sure to get input on there in terms of the roadmap for that on there to make sure that we have all of the agenda items discussed on there. I think that would be very helpful. Anything else? Jack?
With apologies, I have a laundry list here, so but I'd be happy to just write it down too, but first of all, I'd like to know what the proceedings are now with the Regional Water Quality Control Board about the spills. My login shows the Sweetwater siphon, the Mission Bay overflow, and then the pump station number 3 at Midway during the big storm. And that's what I show as pending. On the, on the condition assessment, you covered the smart metering, right, already? Smart metering was covered, right, okay. Then on the condition assessment program, I want to find out, I thought an upgrade on the bridge that goes to the wastewater treatment plant, and then the Hodges Dam update. See how organized I am now. I was all organized last night. And then, of course, we have the Pure Water 2 program. And also, then, we have been getting, am I not correct, that we get a quarterly report, but at least an annual report at this point on the improvement projects and from the engineering and the capital improvements division. And if I start mumbling later on, it's because I found the rest of my list. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Jeff. We'll move on then to the approval of the draft minutes on there. Would anyone like to make a motion to approve the minutes as they are?
Okay.
Would anyone like to second that?
I'll second.
We now have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Now we'll move forward to take a vote. I will call your name and you will respond either yea, nay, or abstain. Please remember that you do not need to have been present at the last meeting to vote or discuss any, to discuss this item. David?
Yeah.
Jim?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Gordon?
Yes.
And myself, Lynn, yes.
Madam Chair, with apologies, the note that I wanted was right in front of me, stuck to the table. The City Council had an agenda item where they extended the contract for the special counsel for the pump storage project at the 10th incentive. I think it would be of great interest to everyone to find out what the status of that one is, because that's the golden goose that's supposed to bring us the wealth and prosperity. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Jack. So we'll move on to agenda item number 6 with the city staff updates on there. Are there any public comments to be read regarding this item? No? Great. Then we'll turn. Okay.
Thank you so much, committee members. Yahida Garst, Interim Assistant Director for the Business Support Branch. Thank you for your continued support and your presence today on this committee. The department continues to deliver clean drinking water and wastewater services while we continue to strengthen our operations. A few department updates for you today. We've welcomed a few key team members to the Public Utilities Executive Team. In July, we welcomed Nicole Riesler. She's the new Assistant Deputy Director over the Finance Division. And Michelle Costello, who is new Deputy Director over the Customer Support Division. Purewater Phase 1 has passed 60% completion, and that will provide a sustainable water supply, making the city less reliant on imported water, which will benefit all of our communities. Last week, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers announced that the city has been selected to receive $240.6 million in low-cost loan financing for our dam improvement projects, which includes Hodges. We'll have more information on that as we receive more information on the program. August is legislative recess, so we were fortunate enough to welcome several council members to some of our facilities. Council member Campillo visited our Alvarado Water Treatment Plant and our Murray Dam. We welcomed Councilmember Bob Wilford to our meter shop, which it helps them understand what our field reps and meter and customer service reps do to make sure that our customers are getting timely and accurate invoices. And then we also welcomed Councilmember Kent Lee to our North Pure Water facility, so we could see firsthand what is going on with our Pure Water project. A lot of exciting things. And then lastly, I wanted to touch on our vacancies that has come up in previous IROC meetings. We are doing really well. We're at 16% job vacancy rate. We're trending in the right direction, and we have a total of 322 full-time vacancies that our Human Resources Department, along with our operating divisions, are working collaboratively to fill all of our critical positions and make sure that our facilities are staffed up to be able to provide the services to all our customers. And we're also recruiting for a new deputy director for our water distribution division. Ken Morgan, who is with us for a little over 2 years, took a job at out of state, and we're actively working to recruit for that position. And with that concludes the updates. Happy to take any questions. Dana?
Yeah. What in the interest of what is considered a healthy vacancy rate?
It's a good question. So for an organization of our size, we're just to put things in perspective, I think The personnel department, who oversees all the classified vacancies, has looked at other agencies across California that are similar sized, and anywhere, I mean, in this job market, 12, 13, 16% were right on target for other agencies of our size. So, well, like I said, that is one of the areas that we are focused on. We've done several hiring events, so not just career fairs to create the exposure of our jobs, but also to do on-site interviews and make sure that we cut out some of the back and forth with our with the candidates so that we can move the process along quickly or so. We used to be, it was a few years ago when I started here, we were probably in the 30s. The fact that we've been able to cut it in half is, we're not where we want to be, but we're trending in the right direction.
Do you feel like the change in the pension system has helped?
Almost definitely, yeah. We've seen positive, we're not only recruiting other employees from other municipalities, but we're actually recruiting folks from the private sector. That fact, along with some of the pay increases, has helped the city tremendously.
And that was a real rock to carry around when the pension wasn't there.
That's right.
Thank you.
Glenn?
Yeah, thank you for your report. Do you know what the status is of the appeal of the rate lawsuit? I know that it initially was decided against the city's tiered rate structure, and the city said they were going to, excuse me, appeal that. The city hasn't heard anything about that in quite a long time.
I'm sorry, I just wanted to keep us on track under the Brown Act that we don't hold
beyond
matters that are on the agenda.
This was under the question and answer part of the directors, so I think it's kind of open.
Okay, well, we'll keep it minimal.
Yeah, and what I can say is that we're happy to bring back once we have more information for you. At this point, we don't, it's still pending, so we're happy to agendize that. And there were a few items that our team jotted down in terms of updates that the committee wants us to report on, so we're happy to agendize some of those items and bring them back with more detail and make sure that we have the appropriate staff.
Any other questions, Coleman?
Yeah. Yes, thank you for the good news. I just wanted to verify both Pure Water 1 and Pure Water 2. This morning's union had a very lengthy, detailed article about the cost overruns and the fact that the project needs another $100 million or something like that. And will there be an opportunity where we can get a more detailed reporting on both Pure Water 1 and Pure Water 2? Because, as I understand it, Pure Water 2 is moving along and there's issues, some very significant issues involving that project as well. I will also point out that as far as the newspaper article is concerned, I have been to the Marina Boulevard pump station. I've been watching that project ever since it started, and the newspaper accounts of it are pretty accurate as far as an old country boy is concerned. But under the circumstances, I think Amy has done an excellent job trying to shepherd this very complex project. So however they can generate that. I noticed on the agenda on the bulletin board as I came in, you have a meeting of the TAC committee of the Metro JAC, and I noticed those agenda items included some very detailed reportings of the pump station one and two. So I make that as a request to the staff. Thank you.
Yeah, we'd be happy to add that on there. It's an item that the committee would like to hear about.
Thank you.
I wasn't interested in the article in the Union today, but I know that they don't always get things right. Is there anything that we should take with a grain of salt, or if it's misleading in the article, or do you think it's a reasonable representation of what's going on?
I think with Pure Water, right, the city's never done a project of that size, and we're seeing construction cost estimates come up 30, 40, 50% higher than what we originally bid for, and where we can go back out and bid, we are doing that, but it's just a symptom of where we are in terms of construction. We have the right team, though, spearheading it, and like I said, we would be happy to bring back engineering capital projects and our team. It's a collaborative effort, and they were just before Environment Committee to talk about the updates and the costs associated with the projects. We can add that to the list.
Question then, as it relates to the Pure Water project, 60% completion, is that on target? Are we behind, or how's that looking in comparison to the overall timeline?
It's doing really well. It's moving along nicely, and the fact that we had some bumps along the road, but I think we're at a good place and we're moving, progressing nicely. I would say that it's right where FY or 2026, the plan, if you all drove by UTC, you can see the building, and it wasn't too long that there was nothing there. It was an empty lot, and so the progress is coming along, and we invite you to take a tour and see how it's moving along and all the stuff that's going in there. Because I think it's one thing to read about it, but to see it firsthand, I had the opportunity a few months ago, and it's incredible. A new facility that's going to be so critical for our water supplies going in at that location, and will help us for many years to come. So if you haven't had the opportunity to take a tour, our team does them all the time, and happy to include some of y'all. If you have time, I know time is always, right? None of us have enough of it.
We'll appreciate the invite there. We'll certainly coordinate a tour then for the board members who are able to join to do so. On there. And thank you for all the updates. Thank you. Moving along to agenda item number 7 with the presentation of the customer support division update. Welcoming Michelle on there. Welcome to the team. Just wanted to confirm there are no public comments for this agenda item. Great. Then we'll turn it over to Michelle. Welcome.
Good morning, everyone.
Okay, can you hear me?
Good morning. My team and I have created a little bit of a presentation for you so that you can get a sense of where we are in the division. I think it's interesting and relevant topics. If there's different topics that you would like to see and kind of go into that as well. As Yahaira indicated, my name is Michelle Costello. I am new to New York City. I'm from San Diego Gas and Electric, been there for 27 years, and led their customer care organization for many years, as well as other customer-facing organizations. So I'm really happy to bring some of that experience and perspective to the customer support division within the community.
Technology, gotta love it when it works, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm happy to continue. There it goes. All right. It's been a while, I understand, since we've all met. I just thought I'd give a brief overview of the division. There's three main groups within this division. The Customer Engagement Center, which is probably one of the areas that you hear about the most. It's made up of about 50 team members. On average, you can expect about 14,000 calls a month is what comes into their contact center. They also receive about 29,000 web forms annually and 24,000 emails. I've listed a couple challenges underneath there for each of these groups. We'll be going into that in depth in the next few slides. Moving over to the billing financial analytics team, also about 50 members. That team generates over 1.8 million sales per year, processes 400,000 payments. In addition, that team has field investigation reps, goes out and conducts 3,500 field investigations and 245 conservation surveys. In addition, this is also the team that responds to ERAs and manages and creates various reporting to help us understand financially how things are happening within the organization. The next team is our systems performance and workforce analytics team. This team is everything that supports the entire division. So it is systems, it is training, development, any big initiatives around technology that is going to support the organization. This is the team that handles that. So we're going to go into some challenges and opportunities that are coming for that team. Any questions before anyone? Workforce challenge that I know you are all very well aware of in the contact center, customer wait times. My understanding is that historic wait times have exceeded an hour in the past, which causes a lot of frustration and staff frustration. They can't get through in phones, and they submit emails and web forms multiple times, and it can compound the issues. So addressing wait times is really important to help customer experience, but also help with our staff being able to effectively respond. Year to date, what I'm happy to let you know is that customer wait times have dropped significantly since July, 66% drop in wait times. In July, we were seeing wait times, my glasses on the left, 25 minutes was the average call wait time. And so far in September, we are trending just over 8 minutes. So we have been utilizing, I think you all are aware that in last fall, we implemented Amazon Connect, and that's a new phone system. And the beauty of that phone system is it gives us a lot more intel, a lot more data and insights into when customers are calling and what they're calling about. So it does help us align our staff and with what our customers are needing and when they're needing it. So just by doing some tweaks and some alignment with staff to our call volume, that has really drastically helped reduce that. And upcoming activities, I wanted to highlight that we do have vacancies. I know that was a discussion that I had talked about a little bit ago. We have 13 customer service representatives that will be onboarded. They're currently vacant, but will be onboarded in the fall. And we're also exploring a feature within Amazon Connect, which is called a callback feature, which allows customers to hold their place in line and then receive a call back from the system when an agent is available. That is really popular with customers. Customers really appreciate not having to sit on hold and being able to receive a call back. So we're excited to explore that. Any questions on this topic? Thank you. My goal is to be under 5. I would like to get under 5.
Yeah. 66% faster. That's incredible.
Thank you. Yes. Team's doing amazing.
It's great.
Yeah. The next topic that goes in line with the wait times, we want to check and make sure that we're not undercutting service and that customers remain satisfied with the service that we're providing. After calls are completed, customers are asked a series of questions. You can see them there. Was the team member able to completely resolve your call? How satisfied are you with the service that you were provided? How courteous would you say our team member was? And how knowledgeable was our team member? And so these kind of serve as an indicator of how customers are generally feeling about the customer experience that they're receiving. I believe shortening the wait times has increased the participation. In the past, what I saw when I looked at past data, it looks as though not as many customers were participating. Customers that were participating were either really raging or really upset. Now we're seeing a lot of customers participate, and the satisfaction remains pretty high. As you can see, 87% said our agents were able to resolve their concern. 84% were satisfied or very satisfied with the service provided
92% said our agents were courteous or very courteous, and 91% said our agents were knowledgeable or very knowledgeable. There has been a big focus on some enhanced training for the CSRs, and I believe that has really increased the confidence in our CSRs and their ability to handle whatever questions, concerns, or issues that customers may bring to us. Some update, upcoming activities. There is a system called Medallia, and that is used citywide for various things. We are going to be digging into the Medallia data for additional insights on what customers need and want from us that might help give us some insights down the road for additional strategies.
Are you seeing any trends in people that say they're not satisfied?
I think we are. I'm going to talk about on the billing side. I think that we're still digging our way out of some of the billing backlogs. And I think most of the time, it's not the agents weren't able to help them. Sometimes that they're not happy with what the actual answer is. It's resolved, but maybe not to the level that the customer is wanting to have us credit a bill back, or they're just not happy with the amount of their bill. I don't know that, but I can look that up. I can get the percentages of people that are participating in the survey. Yeah?
Yeah. Can I ask, do more people call when they have questions, or do you use the website or email to ask the question?
I would say most people call. Yeah, most people call. And if we go to the next slide, we're going to talk about web forms here. I can give you some additional data on that, because it is really important, I feel, that we create those self-service options for customers so that we meet customers where they are, right? So if they want to call, they're more than welcome to call. If they want to submit a web form for particular services, they can do that as well, whatever their choice is. So web forms is something that was launched a little while ago, and it continues to be something that's very popular with customers, especially those that either can't or don't want to sit on hold or talk to a customer. They can do these web forms any time of day or night, right? When they get home from work or early in the morning, whenever is convenient for them. We have seen just under 30,000 web forms submitted this year. 71% of those are in the start-stop service web forms, which is not surprising. Those start-stop service web forms are processed in 1 to 7 business days. We can get through all of those. All the others, if it's billing related, sometimes those take a little bit longer and to investigate and work through. So those are within about 1 to 12 business days. It's important to note that our contact center agents, they not only handle the incoming calls and the volume of those calls, 13,000-14,000 calls a month, but also handle this volume of the web forms. It's the same team, they just rotate through who handles. We have resumed overtime for our CSRs to help address backlog and make sure that we can get those web forms processed in a timely manner. And we also, because we are aligning our staff with our call volumes, when volumes are lower or wait times are lower, we can have more staff during the day working on that form. It's just about optimizing our staff. Did that answer some of your questions?
Yeah, what's the response time for them?
For? Usually, on the topic, start-stop service, we are getting those handled within 1 to 7 business days. And all others is 1 to 12 business days. Upcoming activities is we are modernizing and streamlining several forms that to a Salesforce platform. So the focus on that will be modernizing the start service, stop service, those sales forms in particular, web forms in particular, just to make sure that since it's 71% of the web forms that are coming in, we want to make sure that customers are getting them processed as quickly as possible. So modernizing them means it's going to be validated. Imagine today a customer types out onto a web form all of their information, submits it. Our CSR gets it. They have to take that information and type it into another system, right?
right? So it takes two people typing it in. Now, in the modernization effort, the customer will input their information. It will validate. The CSR can validate, yep, that's all correct, and submit it. So they're not having to retype everything in. So it should shorten the amount of time. We should be able to process them much quicker and much easier. So that's the hope there. We'll be monitoring for changes in these volumes once our wait times and backlogs are lower to see truly do customers want to call, do they want to submit these web forms, what is the customer's preference. We'll see that over time. And we are also are looking at some strategic looks at email as a channel for communication. Email tends to be, regardless of industry, email tends to be a really slow and ineffective channel for communicating with customers, right? Customers can submit multiple emails, and it takes time for staff to then scroll through, search through, group them, find out which ones are duplicates. It's a very onerous process that isn't super customer friendly. So to the degree possible, we would like to minimize email and do things that are more in line with web forms, things like that, that customers can get some immediate response and know exactly where they are in the queue.
So at this juncture then, when the customer submits in a web form, they're not able to really see what the status is, right?
Yeah.
So as a result then, they're going in and submitting another one and another
or
one.
Or call, did you get it? It creates multiple contacts, potentially for the same issue, right? So we want to be able to settle that down, one submission for one issue, and the customer will know that we're handling it, that we received it.
Certainly. With 12 business days being the maximum kind of number of days for all others, that's 2.5 weeks of, right, calendar days on there.
Yeah.
What are your thought process in terms of trying to, obviously there's these upcoming activities to streamline it better, but what are your thought process in terms of what's the maximum number of days that's a reasonable amount of time to respond back to a customer?
I would really love to see that done within just a couple business days, similar to the way that we handle start-stop service. Sometimes, it depends on volumes that are coming in, start-stop service can be handled sometimes within a couple business days, and others take a little bit longer. So I'd love to get everything leveled out and be happening within one business week. But again, we'll see how things go with this modernization. We should be going live with the updated web form sometime in October, we hope. And hopefully we'll have some good updates for you the next time.
Great. Thank you.
Sure.
That just goes back to the previous slide.
Yeah.
There was a time when people would call in and the level of the background experience of call center people, and then so then that call and the issue has to go to somebody else.
Right? Correct.
So far, is that situation, have you been able to train the people who are the first people to respond, are able to kind of take care at that level?
Yeah.
How do you handle that?
Yeah, it is, goes back to the other slide. It is, there was a lot of training that was done to make sure that the agents learned much more background about the billing processes, all of that, which has increased the confidence of those agents to be able to handle whatever the customer is calling for. And 91% said our agents were knowledgeable or very knowledgeable about whatever issue they were calling about.
Thank you. Good news.
Yes, very good news. Very proud of that. Thank you, Peter.
One other quick question. As Lynn mentioned, you're rolling out, modernizing, streamlining the forms.
Mm-hmm.
Will that incorporate or have the ability for them to determine where they are at within that review?
Not just with this modernization effort. There's multiple phases that we're working with IT on that will go over the next couple years to really put more into this platform. And in those future phases, that's when customers will get to see more of that.
Have any idea how long that time is?
I think it's a couple of years out, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. Any other questions?
Yeah, could I ask, are there any functions with the web forms that people don't get involved? If you're going to stop servers, can the computer just do that without an agent being involved?
I don't believe so right now. I believe when we get to the future with PMI and other things, there will be much easier processes. I know at SDG&E that's possible. We don't have to have an agent actually touch that to be able to shut service off. So in the future, I would imagine that would be possible. Yeah, there's so much AI out right now that I would believe that there's a way in which you could streamline and help group all of those requests that are coming in.
I agree.
Okay, if we move on to the next slide, this moves over to our billing and financial analysis. One of the things that I was asked to make sure people understood was that this was a long-standing issue with meter reading many years ago, and that caused kind of this big backlog in our billing. So the biggest backlog within our billing backlog is something called implausibles, which I believe you're all familiar with. Several reasons that a read can be implausible. It could be the consumption's very high, the consumption's very low, maybe there was a previous error or implausible code within that account, and so it's holding it until everything gets cleared. In January 2024, I believe the backlog was over 24,000 held bills or implausibles. I'm happy to report today that we are making really great progress with this backlog. We are down, actually, as of this morning, I checked this morning for you guys, we are down to 15,000 implausibles, down from 24,000 in January. And what we are seeing right now is that we are able to resolve more implausibles every month than is being identified. So we're outpacing the new implausibles. We have resumed overtime to help with that. We have a strategic approach. We have some folks that are addressing kind of new, just hitting the implausible read, brand new implausibles. And then we have folks that are addressing the oldest ones that have multiple implausible readings over many billing periods. And so hopefully by doing that, we're working towards the middle, and we'll meet in the middle. That seems to be working so that we're stopping new ones from becoming repeat implausibles. We have had a 27% reduction in the backlog since June of 2024, and we have done and continue to evaluate the system threshold for when the reads come in, for what high and low reads might look like, and what is a reasonable tolerance. So we have looked at that, and we continue to look at that. Upcoming activities, we are adding 2.75 FTEs to the staffing to focus solely on this backlog, and we have continued coordination with meter services to ensure the rate of meter replacements and meter issues stays consistent, so we stay in front of that. Any questions on the billing backlog? And everything is connected, right? So as we resolve these issues, the reasons customers may be calling or needing to call us, that also comes down, turning the temperature down overall for customers, I think, is what we're starting to see.
When is it determined whether a customer's bill gets estimated versus actuals?
I think it depends on and I don't want to speak for meter services, but I think it depends on what meter services sees out there. If they can't access the meter, if there's enough data, they may estimate. But on our side, the implausible side, it will hold the bill. This is saying, hey, something isn't right. We need eyes on this to look at it before we release. So it prevents us from issuing a high bill or a really low bill.
What happens to the sewer portion of the bill itself? Do you withhold the sewer also and the water?
That is a good question. Do you know the gem?
Yes, withhold the whole bill.
The whole bill.
The whole bill.
Yes.
Is there a difference in the rate of implausibles for automatic meter reading versus manual reading?
We don't have a lot of AMI right now. I don't know. I don't haven't done the comparative analysis between the AMI red meters and the non. I will tell you that in my experience in my at SDG&E, there you have to get really good in those thresholds that you establish so that the automated reads can hit a sweet spot, right, so that you don't get too many high reads and too many low reads. But yeah, there, it does reduce it. Hopefully we're getting better and better at this now so that we'll be much, much better prepared when AMI comes.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? I won't spend a lot of time here, but one of the other pieces that this team does is they handle field investigations. So sometimes when those reads come in and or a customer calls, we need to send someone out to validate the read and making sure that the meter is good, the customer is good. And so as we're working our way through all of these implausibles, it does tend to then increase the number of field investigations that we have to do. The volume of this backlog can go up and down, so it isn't necessarily going to be just a linear decline. As like I said, as we're sending more reps out to go and investigate these meters just to validate what we're seeing, it's going to increase as we're clearing the billing backlog. But then in months where we don't have as many, you'll have less. So I just thought it's very important for you to understand that we do have these field reps who do go out and do these field investigations, and they're very active and very much responding to whatever's happening with our billing. We do have strategic approaches that we're taking to make sure we're doing this as efficient as possible. We are aligning the routes. So we don't have a field service rep going out driving all over the county, right? We're trying to group them in certain areas so that they can get through as many as possible in a more efficient manner. And we're also grouping them by error code. If it's a particular reason we're sending someone out, they can go and hit all of those and have a very efficient route. So we're looking at doing more of that just to keep things as efficient as possible. We also have our water conservation reps who are able to lean in and assist and do some of this as their workload. Upcoming activities in this area are pursuing some updated and modernized workflow tools as well, which is where some of that more strategic alignment comes with routes and error codes and reasons that we might be sending someone out. That will help quite a bit. Applying lessons learned from this backlog to ensure that future volumes are addressed swiftly. We're paying close attention to this backlog and how it responds to implausibles in our billing backlogs and things like that to make sure that we're paying attention to what the causes might be for this backlog.
Do you know what the backlog on field investigations is versus field volume?
Right now, our current backlog for this group is 435. So it's not huge, but it is, as you can see up there, it goes up and down depending on what we're releasing.
So back in June, you were basically zero or even. Because I did a quick count.
Yeah,
that you're
about
400 from just August and September to date.
Yeah. Any other questions on this particular? Can we go to the next slide? I won't spend a lot of time here, but this is the third group that I talked about. This is the group that kind of supports the entire division in all things training, development, and technology. What I wanted to convey here is just this is a very small team. It's just a couple people. And so when we do have a vacancy in this area, it does impact us greatly. Currently, right now, we have a program manager that is an open recruit. We have onboarded a program coordinator to focus on the customer portal, which I'm going to show you that in just a moment. and onboarded and training with the 13 that are coming in the fall, and then the 5 earlier this year. There will be 18 CSRs that this group has onboarded and trained, as well as help to support things like when we have new technology, bringing people in, training them on that, and making sure they're comfortable with the technology before we put them on the phones. Any questions about the staffing element on this team?
I'd like to have a quick question then.
Sure.
So far as bringing new people on board, bringing them, what is the effect of the, are you able to retain them? As our salary and all of the reasons that you want to come to work for CDG, are they out for it?
As far as customer service reps specifically, I'm looking at that right now. I'm trying to get a sense of what the tenure is of the staff and how it works. But in my experience working in call centers and customer care organizations, any customer care call center organization is always going to be your foot in the door in any big organization, right? And so it is not unreasonable to see a higher than normal turnover rate, just because people come in to the call center and then they want to get to somewhere else within the city or within PD. So it is something that I'm looking at. I don't have exact percentages or numbers for you, but it is something that I want to assess.
Right.
You're welcome. The last two things I will talk to you about today is an exciting thing that the System Performance and Workforce Analytics team is responsible for. The first one is the new customer portal. So we talked a lot about web forms and modernizing of the web forms. This one, the customer portal will have 3 total phases. This first phase is just our entree onto the Salesforce platform. So it is modernizing those web forms that are most used and needed by customers. The training has started with an initial group of CSRs to be able to learn how to work these new web forms and what the new system will look like. You can see on here there's added validation that happens, notes can happen, so much more automatically happens that doesn't need to have an agent re-entering information. So we're very excited about this, and the agents are very excited as well. And as I said, there will be multiple phases of this, and it will be led on the PUD side by this team. Any questions? Okay. And my last update that I will share with you is an enhancement on our customer-facing web pages. I think most of you may have seen what the web pages look like today. It's a very long list of links, hyperlinks to various pieces and parts within PD. An assessment was done by a consultant, and we were able to follow their recommendations to be able to create, you see these buttons or these icons that are the things that customers most frequently come to the website to do. They look at our call descriptions, they look at feedback from customers, they looked at all kinds of data, and these are the most common things that customers might come to the website to do. So these are going to speak directly to a customer instead of just a laundry list of links. You're going to see these kind of very simple to read icons. Click on it, it will take you right there. And we're going to continue to roll more changes out and streamline these websites as we get feedback from customers and our staff, because our staff has to help customers navigate these web pages. Go live for these updated, refreshed web pages will be in October of this year. Any questions?
Yeah. Is that option on payment for anything yet?
No. No, sir.
I'm sure that's had an impact, too. And how about cross-training? Are you doing a lot of that so that we have people moving their education from crossover and so on?
With regards to which?
Oh, I guess maybe having CSR cross-trained in billing and so forth.
So the CSRs have learned quite a bit of billing. That was part of our skilling them up so they're more confident and able to handle the calls that are coming in. If things get really complex beyond what the CSR can do, then they do have a process by which they can send it to the billing team. But yeah, we are trying to scale them up as much as possible so that they can handle anything that may come.
Yeah. I also want to say I'm really happy to see somebody like you come on board. Somebody that started by Houston Lighting and Power in Southern California. I know having private sector perspective really allows you to look at things in a different way.
Yeah.
And I was just curious, are there any things that you've implemented based on that experience?
I think really just using the data within Amazon Connect has been very powerful for me. Making data-driven decisions is something that I'm very accustomed to doing. It's an expectation. Looking at that data and making decisions about when we have staff offline working web forms versus when they are on phones taking calls, working with the billing team and really getting to think about how we do attack the backlog. Those are all, I think, it's discipline that I think I just developed over the years in my experience.
Well, my question is, well, back when I was in customer support, we visited the call center at SDG&E.
Oh.
And probably 15 years ago.
Okay.
And of course, we ignored all the good ideas that you had. But I don't recall, did you have tiered levels for CSR, like CSR1, CSR, CSR2?
Yes.
And did you propose something like that, maybe to retain more people?
I've been having discussions with Yehida. Yes, we're trying to figure out how we approach that within the classifications. It's a little bit more challenging within the classifications, but yes, we are trying to see if there's a way forward with that.
Yeah, I don't know how personal those to make your classifications,
yeah.
Thank you. Like I said, I'm really happy to see somebody with your background at SDG&E in that job. I think it's really going to help.
Yeah.
No problem.
Any other questions?
Just a thank you again,
ma'am. Oh, thank you.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Thank you very much for the detailed information and the overview and everything else. Just, I do have one quick question. Looking at those three pillars for the customer support division, and just given, like, the team members and the overall just volume on there and your plan of action, so you do have folks that are slated to get onboarded. Do you think that's sufficient, then, to give you enough resources to execute your goals in terms of streamlining processes and efficiencies?
I think I'm still evaluating that. I literally am on month two. I don't know that if I came in and had absolute answers for you right now, I think that would be misguided. I'm still evaluating that to see really what our needs are, but I do believe it's doable.
Great.
Well,
thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Welcome. Yeah,
very well done.
Hey, Lynn, you want to take a quick 5-minute break to make sure this PowerPoint works for the next one?
Sure, sure. Yeah, we'll take 5. Thank you.
All right.
All right.
Hey, Lynn.
Hey, Mark.
I spent the last 8 years in the Cali in their finance department. So it's nice to meet all of you this morning. Just going to do a very brief update for you on our fiscal year 25 budget. Broadly, the themes you'll see within the budget are related really to both our Pure Water program and regulatory compliance, which we'll talk a little bit about. We're continuing onboarding personnel for operations of the new Phase 1 facility and planning for Phase 2 continues. And from our regulatory compliance perspective, you'll see a focus on our dam safety management program, costs related to power reliability, and our street preservation ordinance here at the city. This slide will show you our fiscal year 23 actuals, both in the two FTEs, personnel expenditures and non-personnel expenditures, and the budget for fiscal year 24 and the fiscal year 25 adopted budget. We'll have final numbers for you on fiscal year 24 once the audit complete and the ACFR is issued, which should be by the end of the calendar year. you'll note that there is an increase in our FTEs. We got 41.5 positions. Again, those will be tied to the budget themes we just talked about. Most of those positions you'll find will be from in our pure water program to support our dam safety management program and also transfer restoration. This slide represents the only portion of the Public Utilities Department that receives funding from the general fund. It's our reservoir recreation programming. This year, our budget included a reduction of almost $60,000 in that contribution from the general fund. That was going to impact our rec programming levels at both Hodges, LCAP, and Sutherland, reducing the number of hours that our services, our rec programs would be open to the public. Fortunately, the County of San Diego stepped up and provided a $50,000 contribution to the city, so there were no impacts to program levels this fiscal year for those rec programming services. This slide is just a top five of significant budget adjustments we wanted to point out today. The first being just the cost of water treatment chemicals, which continues to increase. We're making sure to include that in our current cost of service study, which is underway within the division. We also continue to onboard personnel through both our pure water project and our dam safety program through a multi-phased approach. You'll see we're adding personnel for our dam safety program. And the majority of those costs, about $3.2 million, are actually for replacement of equipment. Additionally, you'll note that Ira mentioned earlier that we did receive a grant award of over $240 million for our dam safety program. So as we work through executing that agreement, we can bring you additional information in the future.
Are these additional expenditures or the total expenditures?
These are the total, but they just were noteworthy because of the increases in those line items. Yeah. This slide just is a highlight of our adjustments to some of our enterprise funds for both our metro and municipal wastewater systems and the revenue there. You'll notice, I want to point out water purchases. When we contemplated the budget, and this was approved in June, we assumed an increase from the San Diego County Water Authority of about 20%. In July, the board approved an increase of 14%. So we will see a small benefit there and reductions of those expenses to the budget. July and August are just pretty warm, so we're seeing sales above and beyond what we also contemplated in the budget in terms of revenue on the water side. The last item there is just a parking expansion at our Toyota yard, which is an expenditure that was also in the budget this year. Currently, the department is working on our next five-year outlook. At the same time, we're working on our cost of service study for both water and wastewater with Raptellus. Both of those reports will be released in December, so we expect to bring those back to you either at our December meeting, if we have one in December, or back in January when we meet then. That concludes my presentation. If you have any questions, I'm available.
Thank you, Nicole. Questions?
Yeah, the water purchases, the $53 million, that seems like that's an increase rather than a total for that. What was the purchases you were planning on for purchases from CWA?
So I would have to look at what our total purchases forecasted were. As you know, we were fortunate to receive a lot of rain again last year, which meant we were able to rely on that local water supply and reduce some of those anticipated purchases. But from baseline to baseline, I don't have that information at this time. I'll bring it back for the next meeting. In the current cost of service, we assumed about a 6-8% increase from the Water Authority. We did plan and budget for that 20%, so I believe you're right that it's a differential. Again, they ended up approving only a 14% increase.
Jeff? On page 6, you show the Toyota Yard parking expansion. as I seem to recall, when they put the new operation center in, you had a dedicated place for the PUB, but then there was settlement all around there. Does this include expansion because of the settlement, or is it just needed more parking?
Thanks for that question, Jack. This is a shared facility among other departments, so not just public utilities. It also includes transportation, stormwater, purchasing and contracting. I'm probably forgetting one. But a few months ago, there was a crater because of the settling, and it's on top of a landfill that has required or necessitated some immediate construction to make sure that it's safe and that there's no gases coming up. That it's been planned, but given just the urgent, we're having to look at it and provide our portion of the parking lot. So it's known. Choyas has a lot of departments, a lot of employees. There's not enough parking to accommodate all the different departmental needs. So the need for us to expand the parking lot has just, in terms of priorities, has rose to the top.
Okay, but if that's the case, then as far as the structures that we built and everything, they're all okay.
Yes.
I'm asking you, I used to live right by there, and I watched them do all that fill. And I watched them haul all that stuff in there. And so I've been there many times. I try to get an invitation to go visit our operations and stuff. That's why I guess I'm asking the question when I answer it. We've got quite an investment in there.
Okay. The buildings are structurally sound and safe, and any items that impact working conditions, hours, are mandatory meet and confer items. We did have to let the unions know that there was an impact to some of the employees when that was discovered, but we're working through with them. But the buildings there's no plan it's the parking lot that, just with the settling, has become an apparent need.
Well, that's good news. Thank you.
I have one. As it relates to the 5-year outlook that you're looking to prepare, how can we try to minimize just the significant budget adjustments on there?
So, affordability is certainly top of mind, especially as we're going through our cost of service study now. So we are looking at everything from our planned capital projects, making sure that we are forecasting correctly some of those costs so that we're not surprised by the cost of projects at the end of them. But again, it's been a very dynamic environment, just as costs have increased over the last couple years significantly. We're trying to make sure that our baseline expenditures within that cost study are in there and identified. So as we're looking at rates, we have that captured.
Any other questions, comments? Thank you very much, Nicole. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
So moving on to agenda item number 9, with the adoption of the FY25 work plan on this. Just to confirm again, are there any public comments for this agenda topic? No. Then we'll move forward with, this one here.
We can put it up on the screen, Lynn. Yeah, work plan if you'd like.
Sure, okay. If we have that available.
Yeah.
So we're looking to take action on this one here. On this.
We can start with this little light to figure this out.
Okay, we have it here on this as it relates to FY25 annual work plan. If there are no other comments then on this, would anyone like to make a motion to approve?
I'll make that motion.
Great. Thank you. Would anyone like to second? We have a motion to second then. Since there's no other discussion, then we'll go ahead and move forward with the votes on there. David?
Yes.
Jim?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Gordon?
Yes.
Lynn, myself, yes. So we'll move forward with the item number 10 with the selection of the chair and the vice chair. Obviously, no, we are still currently waiting to fill those vacancy seats, and so hopefully we'll make some progress on here soon on there. In the meanwhile, then, would anybody like to make a motion for the chair?
I would like to make a motion for Lynn to continue as our chair.
One second.
And thank you, David, and I will gladly accept on there, and then we'll go ahead and take a motion for that. David?
Yes.
Jim?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Gordon?
Yes.
Great, thank you. And then with the vice chair, then I was going to make a motion to have David continue as my vice chair on this. Anyone here to second that motion?
I'll second.
Great, thank you. Then we'll move forward with the votes. Jim?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Gordon?
Yes.
Myself, yes. David?
Yes.
Great, thank you. So moving on to agenda item number 11, we'll move forward since there's, Jerry's not here. Then are there any other questions or comments? David?
Given the challenges that we've had with getting quorums lately, I think it would be a good idea to start scheduling our subcommittee meetings so that at least if we can get a quorum on a subcommittee meeting, we can have some input and get some information that can then be shared later.
Certainly. Are there any challenges with that given the minimum number of board members that we have?
That is a great question.
I recall that there might have been an issue, and that's why we're not able to have a subcommittee.
Dan Hill, Internal Assistant Director for ESCWA. I would like to defer to the attorney, but on advice for them was to postpone or cancel subcommittees until kind of quorum issues get fixed. We didn't want to have a just to meet the subcommittees and have the items heard and not be moved forward to full committees. So it's a recurring meeting. I think that was the issue, but if Bonnie has any better way to put it, please defer her.
No, that's correct. And the subcommittee should be meeting and working at the direction of the full committee to bring items to the full committee. We shouldn't be utilizing subcommittees in lieu of the inability to meet. As I know that there are quorum issues and this is creating part of the problem, but the subcommittees can't act in lieu of the full committee.
Now, that's not what I'm suggesting. I'm just saying that at least we can receive information, give some input. Obviously, we can't vote on anything, but if we could at least share some ideas.
I'm happy to talk to the attorney before.
Yeah, and like I said,
it's not up to me, but
if it's not doable, I'm not going to argue it. If it's not doable, it's not doable. But perhaps you could bring some pressure on the mayor's office to get this done, because it's starting to feel to me like the city just wants us to die by attrition.
And David, if I can, staff did let me know that they had a meeting with the mayor's office last week, and so this is on. They've been in discussions about filling the vacancies, and the commissions, the board of commissions is aware that we have vacancies on here, and we have quorum issues, and that was something that was addressed, and so hopefully we'll have more information for you all that will help.
Yeah, I remember meeting with them a year or two ago about this, and they were going to get on it, and still nothing's happened, so they don't want us to do this anymore, they just tell us. We're all reserving this time on our calendars every month, hoping that we're going to have a forum. But I think what we do is relatively important. I just hope that you can convey that to the mayor's office that this is really becoming a problem.
We have expressed the challenges, and so we, like I said, just as of last week, there's a meeting with the mayor's team, and they're working with the boards and commission. And you guys know, they're not just hearing it from us, they're hearing it from you. So I think a collective effort, hopefully we'll see some traction.
And I know the department's doing everything that it can. Thank
you.
I'd like to add to that. So Jim, you and I are members of this organization since it's founded in 2007, I've lost count. And I'm here because we want to maintain a quorum. So this old dog, I'm moving along now. And maybe the next time you see the mayor's office, okay, you just let them know that there is an ancient dog here that's coming to a high-paying job, okay? High-paying job. And I'll keep coming, ma'am. I will keep coming because I think this organization is important to the citizens of San Diego and to the ratepayers of PUD. And that's one problem with old ancient people is that they start making speeches. I'll cut it off right now because otherwise I'll start singing and then you folks will really go happy now. Thank you. Yeah, please. It's very important, I think.
Thank you for your continued service. We always appreciate when we are able to meet because you guys are an important part, right? You're part of the community. And so we will certainly do what we can on our end to relay the issues. And you guys can do the same. We can tackle it from different angles. So.
I'm sure you realize that 4 out of the 6 of us here have turned out many, many years ago. But unless I'm misspeaking, I think David and Lynn are the only two that are legitimate board members at this point. We just continue to serve. And with that in mind, knowing that there are 4 out of 6 and only 6 out of 10, 12, 11, is there any way of adjusting the quorum? Because it's not to our decision to not have all but 2 board members filled. So it's not for that we're 5 down, we're 9 down. I would have stepped away quite some time ago, but I keep coming back because there's no one to take my position. I'm a busy professional, just like the rest of us on it. And we do serve at your pleasure, and I'll continue to serve, but this is getting out of hand. And it really does need to be addressed, not just the top 2. It needs to be addressed. Is there a way to change the quorum? If there's only 6, and we've only been 6 for over a year, can we change the quorum to 3 or 4?
I want us to not go foul of the Brown Act, but since this isn't your work plan, some of this I'm going to allow. But this committee is established through the municipal code, so there would have to be changes to the municipal code with respect to the number of members and the bylaws of the office. We've also asked previously, too, if we can even change the mechanism to allow some other flexibility with establishing quorum, right? Not necessarily just in person, but if we could have, like, a hybrid option. And I know that's not a viable option on there, too, but we've asked and hoping that we can address and hear some really true progress as it relates to filling these vacancies because there have been so many applicants that have even came forward and told us we're just waiting on here on that. But hopefully next time around we get some good updates on that.
Could you provide Lynn with the contact information for whoever's driving this in the mayor's office?
Yeah, I can do that.
Thank you.
Great, thank you. Any other questions or comments?
Lynn, could you share that with everyone in the year?
Absolutely. Okay. Great. Happy belated birthday to Jack. On there. Yes, and thank you very much today for everyone just hanging tight in here and all your continued service. Really appreciate it. Thank you, everyone.